All right, Acts chapter 24. Acts chapter 24, we're going to pick up where we left off last week, and that'll begin in verse 10. Verse 10, it says, "Then Paul, after that the governor had beckoned him to speak, answered, 'For as much as I know that thou hast been of many years a judge unto this nation, I do the more cheerfully answer for myself, because that thou mayest understand that there are yet but 12 days since I went up to Jerusalem for to worship. And they neither found me in the temple disputing with any man, neither raising up the people, neither in the synagogues nor in the city. Neither can they prove the things whereof they now accuse me. But this I confess unto thee, that after the way which they call heresy, so worship I the God of my fathers, believing all things which are written in the law and in the prophets, and have hope towards God, which they themselves also allow, that there shall be a resurrection of the dead, both of the just and the unjust. And herein do I exercise myself to have always a good conscience, void of offense towards God and toward men. Now, after many years, I came to bring alms to my nation and offerings, whereupon certain Jews from Asia found me purified in the temple, neither with multitude nor with tumult, who ought to have been here before thee, and object if they had aught against me. Or else let these same here say, if they have found any evil in me while I stood before the council, except it be for this one voice that I cried standing among them, touching the resurrection of the dead, I am called into question by you this day.'" Now, Paul is standing before the governor Felix in Caesarea, just to remind you, and he's now been given the opportunity to speak in defense of himself. After having been accused by the Jews of three things, the Jews in the prior verses, the first 10 verses of the chapter, had accused Paul of sedition. We went over this last week. Heresy and desecration of the temple, none of which were even remotely true, as you know. But Paul gladly spoke for himself, as we just read. And he tells Felix in verse 10, starting out there, he tells Felix, he said, "I'm aware that you've governed us for a long time. And because of that, I'm very happy to speak to you about this." Now, what he's saying, why he's happy that Felix is somewhat seasoned in governing over that province, is because that meant that he had a broad knowledge of the ways, the laws, the customs, and all of the Jews. The Jews lived within the jurisdiction of this province that he was governor over, okay? And so years of experience would have given him opportunity to get more acquainted with the way the Jews do things. And so that would qualify him to give a more fair, yet it actually obligate him to give a more fair decision regarding this situation. So with that being the case, Paul begins in these verses to carefully kind of pick apart the charges that the Jews had laid against him. First of all, the first charge was that of sedition. And Paul, if you'll remember, we discussed it last week, but sedition simply meaning an uprising or a rebellion of some sort of thing. They had claimed that Paul was guilty of this. Remember, they said he was a ringleader of the sect of the Nazarenes and that he was just a troublemaker everywhere he went. And they were just basically saying that Paul's going around stirring up people, trying to create some sort of uprising. Well, Paul points out in verse 11, as we just read, he says, "But that thou mayest understand that there are yet but 12 days since I went up to Jerusalem for to worship." You know what Paul's saying there? He's saying it would be really hard for me to have been guilty of being this big ringleader and creating this uprising or revolt of some kind if it was just 12 days ago that I arrived at Jerusalem. And the other side of that is the last 5 days he's been locked up. So in a seven-day window, essentially his argument is how in a seven-day window could I have possibly created this revolt or uprising, this sedition that they're accusing me of? The whole ideal of him lending in some way towards this sort of insurrection is absurd. And he states at the end of verse 11 what his true purpose for coming to Jerusalem was. And he says there, he says, I went up to Jerusalem for to worship. And of course, we know that's exactly right. Paul had no intentions of going and creating any problems. He went to Jerusalem to worship. And he was never found creating any problems, whether public or private or anything else that he's being accused of. And so all of that is false. And he makes it clear in verse 13 that his accusers have no evidence to support those claims. He says in verse 13, he says, neither can they prove these things whereof they now accuse me. So with that being understood, that there's no, he's made his argument here that there's no kind of sedition. Really, this case should have been dismissed at that point, because of the three charges that they brought against Paul, that is the only one that really had anything to do with the Roman government. The rest are just based on religious interest or religious in nature, something that could be settled amongst the Jews and within their government. So really, without any kind of sufficient evidence, this case should have just been kicked right back to the Jews and been over, and of course let the Jews sort it out. But that's not what happened here. And so Paul moves on to the second charge. In verse 14, he says, but this I confess unto thee, that after the way which they call heresy. Remember, we've talked about that, the way. That's speaking of Christianity. There's a reference of Christianity. So worship I God of the fathers, believing all things which are written in the law and in the prophets, and have hope towards God, with they themselves also allow, that there shall be a resurrection of the dead, both of the just and the unjust. And so what Paul's saying here, as far as heresy goes, he's saying, because that's one of the accusations, nothing really could be further from the truth. The fact is Paul's belief in Christianity was right in line with the laws and prophets. In spite of the fact that he disagreed with the Jews because they rejected the Messiah, he in no way, form, or fashion went against Jewish belief system by becoming a Christian. Ironically, it's Paul's accusers here, which were Sadducees, that had parted from the Word of God more than Paul ever thought about it, because they denied the resurrection. The Sadducees actually didn't even embrace all of the Old Testament as inspired. They only embraced the first five books of the Bible. And so unlike the Pharisees, the Sadducees were only partial believers in the law and the prophets anyway. And so Paul, in a great sense, is more orthodox in his beliefs than these people that have followed him to Jerusalem to accuse him. So he says in verse 16, consequently he has a good conscience before God. He says, herein do I exercise myself to have always a good conscience, or a conscience void of offense towards God and toward men. And so now he comes to the third. He's dealt with the insurrection. He's dealt with the issue of heresy in his defense. And now he goes to the third charge that they brought against him, and that's of having desecrated the temple. Verse 17, he says, now, after many years I came to bring alms to my nation and offerings. Now this reminds us of the primary objective Paul had when coming to Jerusalem to start with. And if you'll remember what that was to bring offerings. You remember he had traveled on his missionary journeys, that third missionary journey. He had traveled far and wide, taking up offerings, taking up collections, if you will, passing the plate at the different Gentile churches throughout the Gentile world, and just going to get a love offering, essentially, to take to Jerusalem so he could relieve those impoverished Jewish Christians there of their sufferings. And that was his full intent. And that was really the primary reason for him to go to Jerusalem. Of course, as he stated in the previous verses, worship was important as well. But he was going to take those offerings. And then upon arriving in Jerusalem, he went through, and I'll point this out to you in just a moment, he went through the appropriate purification process before he ever went to the temple. I want you to notice what he says there in verse 18. He says, "Whereupon certain Jews from Asia found me purified in the temple, neither with multitude nor with tumult." And so what he's basically saying there is he knew what he needed to do. He had been traveling through the Gentile world there, and there were certain ritual purification processes that had to be followed. If you were a Jew and you'd been traveling in Gentile nations before you came back and before you enter into the temple. And Paul says, "I've already gone through all that. I was purified when these guys ran onto me here, and when I went into the temple." And notice what he was really, they found him purified as he was supposed to be, but he didn't have any kind of gathering around him. He didn't have, as he says there in verse 18, a multitude or any kind of tumult. In other words, they found him doing the right thing, not causing trouble, not gathering a crowd, not causing a scene. There had been no disturbance, no revolt, no unruly crowd of any kind. What they found him was doing just basically what he was supposed to be doing. But it was the Asian Jews that were the problem. He mentions that in verse 18. They were the ones, if you remember, that after Paul had traveled through the Gentile world on his third missionary journey, those Asian Jews that had been offended by Paul during his travel, they're the ones that went to Jerusalem, and when they saw Paul in the temple, started this whole problem that Paul has here. I want you to back up a couple of pages to verse 21, or chapter 21 rather, and I'll just remind you of what took place. Verse 27 of chapter 21, it says, "And when 7 days were almost ended, the Jews which were of Asia, when they saw him in the temple," so they just saw him, they didn't see him doing anything, "they stirred up people and laid hands on him, crying out, 'Men of Israel, help. This is the man that teacheth all men everywhere against the people and the law and this place, and further brought Greeks also into the temple and hath polluted this holy place.'" And so that charge right there, just a couple of chapters ago, which was really just 12 days ago, I'll remind you, is the very thing that started this whole big process. It started a riot right there immediately. That resulted in Paul's being beaten, if you'll remember, before the Roman authorities came and arrested him. And then the Roman authorities were going to scourge him, but they found out he was a Roman, so they didn't do that. And so they took him before the Sanhedrin, where another riot broke out, and they had to rescue him. And so it's been a long 5 days since all this took place. And so now let's read verse 19, and I'm almost done. And then he says in verse 19 the very thing that I've been thinking all along. He says, "Who ought to have been here before thee and object if they had aught against me." See, he's talking about the Asian Jews that started this whole thing back in Jerusalem. He's saying, where are they now? Why are they not here bringing these accusations? Why are they not here telling you the things that I did? If I defiled the temple, then, and the very ones that accused me of doing so, why didn't they follow me here to Caesarea? And of course, there was no answer for that. And so that whole statement right there really undermined, if you will, the whole case that's being brought against Paul. And then Paul speaks of the ones that did travel to Caesarea and were present there. He speaks to them in verse 20. He says, "Or else these." In other words, these that have came here, if they have found evil doing in me, while I stood before their council. And so what he's saying, this group here, which would have been members of the Sanhedrin, those that did follow me over here, then where are, what things did they find wrong with me when I stood before them? And of course, the answer to that is really nothing. And so it all boils down to one thing. At verse 21, he speaks of the resurrection and that being the issue that these guys had with him. That's true. That's very true. The Sadducees didn't believe in the resurrection, so they were offended by that. But it boils down to something more deep than that. And it boils down to this. In the very same way that the Jews rejected Jesus for really no specific reason. They just had it out for him. And that's exactly what Paul's up against here, is that you just basically, if it's not the hogs, it's the chickens, okay? We're going to find something to be mad about towards you, Paul. And I think, we're going to read next time together, but I think Felix, the governor that this is all being said to, I think he's picking up on this. It's evident in the next few verses as we study them next time we're together. I think he's seeing the writing on the walls himself. And so these are not the most exciting verses that we go through in the Bible, but they're there and we're going to cover them anyway. And so maybe next week it'll get a little more thrilling. Okay, let's go ahead and stand. Appreciate you guys very much. Work day again.